Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online. SunburyMotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Routine, difficult, and they're always looking for new technicians. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. It is always a pleasure to talk baseball any time of the year with Scott Lauber, including right now. Hello, sir.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Doing really well. I hope the winter has treated you well.
It has. The Phillies went a period of about 65 days between major league moves, so that's a nice little vacation for me.
Yeah, it is.
So it's been
it
good.
Is. Yeah, it's been really good. So the Hall of Fame vote came up, and in fact, Utley and Rollins, neither one is even sniffing getting there. But it's also, for Utley, is a long road. I mean, he's just on for the first time. What did you think of the vote totals you saw from them?
So it was sort of an as expected. If I was surprised by anything, it was two things. It was, number one, that Utley wound up with such a big difference between the public ballot number and what his ultimate number was. So for people who don't know, we cast these votes typically in December. They're due by December 31st. The announcement comes roughly a month later. So, and we receive the ballots right around Thanksgiving. So from Thanksgiving through the middle of January, there's a guy out in the Bay Area who does a terrific ballot tracker.
Yes.
His name is Ryan Thibodeau on Twitter or X, and he does a terrific job of kind of gathering and chronicling all the ballots that are made public. Not everybody makes their ballot public, but I would say 55-60% of the voters do. And so Ryan does a pretty good job of collecting them, tabulating them. And so going into the ballot, the election announcement, you kind of know where people stand among the public ballots that were revealed. And I think he got close to 60% of the ballots made public this year. And Chase Utley going into Election Day was just a shade under 40%, 39, 38, somewhere in that range.
Right.
Now, what we've found over the years is that typically the percentages do go down from the public reveal to the ultimate reveal, you know, announcement, but Chase Utley came in at 28%. So there was, you know, he did notably worse among the voters who didn't make their ballots public. I can't tell you why that is. I don't know what the demographic of those voters is, if there's any common denominator. But it was a bigger drop than I think we typically see from a lot of candidates. So I thought he was going to do better than he did, ultimately, based on what we were seeing from the tracker. But as you noted, it was year one for him, and we've seen plenty of candidates who, Scott Rowland, for instance, don't do as well as Chase Utley did in the first year and end up getting in.
Right.
The second thing that I was a little bit surprised about, but based on the tracker I kind of expected, was that Jimmy Rollins did not receive a great boost with Chase Utley being on the ballot. I kind of wondered whether voters who were not voting for Jimmy Rollins but were going to vote for Chase Utley would come around on Rollins once they considered both of them, and that didn't happen quite as much. Jimmy finished at 14-point-something percent, which was just a hair above last year, which was just a hair above the year before. So he's seeing year-over-year gains, but they're pretty modest gains, pretty minor gains, and in year four, he's got a long way to go. He's going to have to make a jump at some point if he wants to put himself into position to ultimately make it.
You can vote for 10, Scott. How many did you vote for?
Seven.
So
which... I voted for the three Hall of Famers who did get in, Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, and Joe Mauer. I voted for Billy Wagner. I voted for Chase Utley. I voted for Gary Sheffield. And I voted for Carlos Beltran.
All those make sense to me. Sheffield, to me, is one that's... I realize that the cream incident with Barry Bonds, but that was his worst year. To me, a gauge as a fan, and this is a feel thing, it's not a next-gen stats thing, and he's on deck, and I'm sitting there, man, they can't face that guy.
Yeah.
To me, that was Gary Sheffield. He was like, if you're sitting as a fan, they can't face that guy.
Yep. Yep, so. I agree. And from talking to people in the game over the years, you know, you heard a lot of, we can't let that guy beat us. Don't want to face that guy with men on base. When he comes up to the plate, you don't look away, right? That's not when you go get your popcorn.
Yeah.
He was must-see television, must-see watch. You talk to pitchers who faced him. He had that bat waggle, right? And it was one of the more ominous, intimidating things anyone who stood on a mound ever saw was Gary Sheffield come up there and waggle that bat. He knew he was going to hit the ball hard. He finished his career with 300 more walks than strikeouts, which tells me that he was a hitter more than just a slugger. And, you know, I watched, you know, watched his entire career, covered a large majority of his career, never covered him, but, you know, on a daily basis. But I have spoken to him about other players. I remember talking to him years ago for a story about David Ortiz, and found him to be insightful and have a lot to say about hitting. So he's been a yes for me for a while, and unfortunately, this was his 10th and final year. He topped out at about 63%. I know that there were some people who thought that the PED link was a disqualifier for them with him. I respect that. I've been asked by a lot of people, because I don't vote for Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez, why not them but Gary Sheffield? And my answer has been, and this is my 9th year as a voter, my philosophy has been that I draw kind of a line of demarcation at 2004 when testing was instituted and suspensions were put in place. Prior to 2004, Major League Baseball looked the other way, and so I tend to look the other way. I judge those players based on what they did. Do I think they were a Hall of Famer or not? Whether or not they were linked to PEDs, there was no testing. And as I said, if MLB was going to look the other way, I'll look the other way. After 2004, when MLB said, look, you know, no more. We're testing. If you fail a test, you get suspended.
Yes.
If you kind of had the temerity to continue doing it, you failed a test and you got suspended, well, then that's a disqualifier for me. So that's why yes to Sheffield and David Ortiz and those people over the years, and no to A-Rod and Manny.
Right, and that I admire that standard. Who was eighth for you, where you fought it a little bit and just finally at the end said, no, leave it at seven?
Yeah, it's a good question. So there were three or four who I kind of left the ballot on my desk for a few weeks and was sort of like, do I check their name before I put it in the envelope and send it back? And for me, those were Jimmy Rollins, who I've kind of grappled with for the last few years, Andy Pettit, Andrew Jones, who I've also come close on the last few years. Those are really the three that I kind of deliberated on the most. And, you know, in Rollins' case, I can't get there just yet. The number I keep bumping on is he was, you know, I look at lots of numbers, traditional numbers, new numbers. I covered Jimmy through his peak as well. Every day from 06 to 09, and I know him fairly well, and I think Jimmy was a great player. For me, he's, you know, the OPS plus being 5% lower than league average over the balance of his career, is one thing I have trouble with. I have trouble with the fact that, you know, if you asked me what was Jimmy Rollins' best season, of course it was 2007, his MVP year. If you asked me what his second best season was, I struggle with that because I find that the MVP year was kind of the outlier. You know, the rest of his career was outstanding, but 2007 took him to a different level for that year. You know, he was the MVP, team to beat, all of that stuff. Performance, impact, was all Hall of Fame worthy. And if he'd had another few years that were as top of the peak as 07, he's in for me. For me, the rest of his career was really, really good, excellent, but kind of, you know, there was that one. 07 to me is more of the outlier year. So whereas Chase Utley had a peak that was higher, it was shorter, you know, it was 05 to 10 or 11. It was shorter than a lot of people want in their Hall of Famers. But for me, he was the best second baseman in the league for a period of time of 5 or 6 years. I couldn't say that about Jimmy at his position for 5 or 6 years. So I bumped on him there. Andy Pettit, somebody brought up to me that CC Sabathia, who comes on the ballot next year, has numbers that are very, very similar to Andy Pettit. So why is it that most people think Sabathia is a no-doubt Hall of Famer, and Pettit has had some trouble getting traction? So I took a longer look at him. I do believe we are going to have to reevaluate how we look at pitchers in this era. You really can't compare a pitcher from this era to one from, you know, the 80s or even the 90s, because pitching was so much different. I'm glad that I'll have an opportunity again to review guys like Rollins, Pettit, Andrew Jones, again next year, and maybe I'll get there with them. I think I've come closer on some of them over the last few years, and you know, I just haven't gotten far enough to check those boxes yet.
When it's a tiebreaker for you, you're like, okay, one way or the other. You mentioned Sabathia and you mentioned Pettit. What does postseason do to figure into your mindset about a guy? Because Pettit's postseason numbers are really good. Sabathia's are really up and down, for example. Utley was a great postseason player.
I factor it in. I do. It does sometimes make the difference for me. It does sometimes put a guy. Now, Curt Schilling was another one who, all those years, you know, you couldn't look at Curt Schilling's career and not take into account what he did in the postseason. The great postseasons he had over the course of his career. So, sure, I put it in there with everything else. I wouldn't say I weigh it most heavily, but I don't think it's just like an afterthought for me either. It's something that I definitely consider. And, you know, it works both ways. I've been a Billy Wagner voter for a long time, and one of the major criticisms of him, and it's a valid one, is that in the postseason, he didn't perform very well. And at his position in particular, closer, what more important thing is there than postseason dominance and slamming the door to win your team a title? That never happened for him. I thought in his case, the regular season dominance was enough to overtake it. But I do respect and I do understand people who knock Wagner or don't vote for Wagner because of the postseason failures.
Interesting. You mentioned some time between what the Phillies are doing, moves, and so forth. One of the ones was the one that Bryce Harper's agent put out about a contract extension. I mean, I thought he had a contract extension. It was 13 years. What did you think when you saw that negotiating ploy?
It's an interesting one. I was a little surprised that Scott Boras was as direct about it as he has been. It is interesting. You go back about a year or so ago, and Bryce Harper came to spring training. He had the was coming off the elbow surgery, and he made a comment on the day that he arrived that I think most people sort of, you know, missed or kind of glossed over, where he talked about wanting to play into his 40s. Now, he's signed to this 13-year contract, which runs through his age 38 season.
Yes.
So I kind of filed it away and, he wants to play into his 40s, which means this is not going to be his last contract. right. If that's his intention. And he's made that indication a few times since, where he's talked about wanting to play into his 40s. And, you know, you look around, and one of the things that Bryce Harper did not want when he signed this contract was he did not want the opt-out clause that we see now in so many of these deals, where after year three or year five or whatever it is, player can opt out of his contract, go back out on the market, and, you know, and make more money. Manny Machado, who signed with the Padres the same year.
I was just
year
about
that,
to say that, yep.
He had the opt-out. He did not end up using it, but he did use it as leverage to get the Padres to renegotiate his deal. Harper doesn't have that, and by his own request, he didn't want that. Scott Boras kind of invented it when A-Rod got his opt-out umpteen years ago when he signed his huge contract with the Rangers. He used the opt-out. It's how he ended up getting to the Yankees or getting staying with the Yankees after he'd gotten traded over there. No, Harper didn't want it. I do wonder whether now whether either Harper and or Boras has regrets that it's not there. They don't have leverage in this situation. The Phillies do not have any. There's nothing to compel them to say, all right, we'll rip up this deal, we'll renegotiate a new deal and stretch this contract, other than, you know, wanting to keep Harper happy and or, you know, reward him for being a good teammate and a good soldier. When they made the decision in November to move him to first base going forward, I wrote about this a little bit, and I said, you know, of course Harper was going to say that he's fine with playing first base, but I do think it's part of this, you know, this thing in his mind where, like, you know, I've been a good teammate, I've been a good soldier, I've helped you recruit all these players, I've moved to first base, I want to play into my 40s. I don't want to play anywhere else. You know, do me a solid the way I've done you a solid. Ultimately, I think they probably will work something out. I don't know that it's going to happen anytime soon where they can extend his contract to get him to an age where he wants to retire and retire as a Philly. But it is interesting to try to use this strategy now when, like I said, he has no leverage for for getting the Phillies to renegotiate.
Yeah, I was bringing up the Machado thing because, yeah, that is the ultimate right there. He didn't use it. But you're right. I mean, what?
But he threatened it. Yep.
Yeah. But what leverage does he have along the way? And to a fan base, I mean, I think it's great he wants to stay. But if you're a fan base, you're saying, well, wait, they're already paying him in the 20s until, you know, how much more time he's got in this thing. I mean, I just think it's a bad PR move as well.
Yeah, I kind of thought that Harper would let it play out another few years, you know. Take another few kicks at the can at winning a World Series. You certainly have a lot more goodwill, I guess you could say, stored up when you've been to the World Series multiple times. Maybe you've won one, you've been through a parade, and then you decide to say, hey, look, you know, I'll tell you what. Like, I know I'm only halfway through my contract, but it only goes through my age 38 season. I want to play till I'm 40. I love it here. I don't want to play for anybody else. Can we work something out so that, you know, maybe it gets me to 40, 41 and keeps me a Philly forever? And, you know, at that point, the shine of a championship, you know, the organization says absolutely we'll do that for you. I kind of thought Harper would let that play out another few years. And it's funny, when Boras said that in answer to a question about Harper at the winter meetings, I followed up with Boras and I said, you know, this is just year five. You know, is this something that needs to happen now or needs to get done now? Like, why is this coming up now? And Boras said, well, when Bryce Harper comes to you and tells you this is what I want, he usually, you know, he usually is fairly, it means it's on his mind. It's something he's thinking about and he'd like to address it. And he came to me and said, like, what can we do? So, you know, it's clearly something that's been on his mind. I'm just surprised it's bubbling up now as opposed to, you know, after another couple of years.
It's great that it's the middle of January. We can talk baseball. Scott, thanks so much. I really appreciate the time. As always, my friend, thank you.
You bet, Steve. Anytime.
Scott Lauber, Philadelphia Inquirer. He really does great work. Really does.